Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil. How are you doing today, sir?
Hello, sir. Happy post-Christmas. Yes. Welcome back post-holidays. I have eaten a lot of food. I have stuffed my face. We have celebrated. We've driven around and looked at all the Christmas decorations in Vancouver. We did what Rebecca calls an ooh-ah tour, where you drive around and when you see the pretty lights, you go, ooh. Yeah, you got to do that. So we did that. That was a fun night.
What did you eat? Tell me what you ate.
Oh,
what
did you eat? Ham and the turkeys and the cranberry sauce and all the classics.
Yeah.
That's what the holidays are all about, right? Food. We made cookies. Yeah. We decorated cookies. Yeah. It's been a fun holiday.
Yeah. See, when it comes to like traditional holiday foods, like a ham and turkey, it's difficult because Megan's vegan, right? And when you're vegan, you can't have ham and you can't have turkey. And nobody to this date has come up with a really good ham, like a vegan ham, an imitation ham. There's a great imitation burger. I think you've had a Beyond Burger before, right?
I love Beyond Burgers. Yes.
They're lovely.
Oh, they're lovely. Delicious.
Mm,
so, I don't know how they make the Beyond Burger taste so it's got the fatty yumminess of like a beef, of a ground beef that's just it's buttery in your mouth. It's delicious.
You agree. It's like if someone was to hand you, here's a Beyond Burger, here's a regular burger, take your pick. You would pick Beyond Burger.
I love Beyond Burgers. Yeah, I love them.
And I just got a text from Megan saying imitation ham is amazing. I did not know there's a good imitation ham. Okay, well, I stand corrected.
Oh, good to know. I'm sure there's
good to know.
I remember once years ago, I was stuck on location by myself during Thanksgiving. I couldn't fly home or, you know, be with family. Right. So I decided to go to the store and I was on one of those. I am not a vegetarian, but I was working and I'm by myself and I was on one of those health kicks. So I decided to get like this small imitation turkey, like vegetarian turkey. And it was like a little ball and you stick it in the oven and you bake it or whatever. And I did that. It was the most disgusting, so gross. And it made me even sadder. I'm like, I'm by myself in a hotel room on Thanksgiving and I'm eating this imitation turkey that just, it made me nauseous to eat it. It was so bad. So there are some good ones out there for vegetarians, I'm sure. I don't mean to offend or insult vegetarians because there's some amazing food, but there's also, let's admit it, some really bad junk out there that's just disgusting.
Robbie, would that rank as your saddest Thanksgiving then?
I think it might have been. Yeah, it was pretty.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It's funny because people think like, oh, showbiz is so glamorous. And there's moments where it can be very glamorous, but it's kind of like the carnival. It's like being a carnival worker. Yeah. Like you're always traveling in strange places. Yeah. You don't get the comfort and warmth of some of the traditions that a lot of people enjoy with family and friends. And and it's not glamorous a lot of times. No. That was a pretty sad little by myself in a hotel room with a fake tofu turkey.
Well, I'm going to share my saddest one too then. We have to balance that out. My saddest Thanksgiving was in college when I was at college at UCLA. And I had been invited to Thanksgiving from more than one person. This is when my parents were still living back in Tennessee. So I wasn't going back for Thanksgiving. So I had received two invitations from two buddies of mine to go back to their parents' house.
Right.
Hey, come on, come on down, and one female friend. But there was this one particular young lady that I was really hoping to get an invitation from, which I was waiting and waiting. So I turned down everybody else thinking I would be invited to this one girl that I kind of had a crush on.
Right.
And I never got the invite. And so what I did was I went to a local restaurant that was still open that made a turkey dinner to go. And it was in a styrofoam box. And I remember taking it back to my condo and I was sitting there and of this, I don't know, 600 unit condo, 590 people were gone. There was like nobody was there.
Nobody was there except for me. Oh, yeah. No.
So I'm eating out of this styrofoam box, this turkey dinner at college, thinking about I could have been somewhere else if I wasn't so stupid and held out for this supposed invite that was supposed to come that never came. And I remember sitting there eating that turkey dinner and hearing all the leaves rust just being blown about by the wind outside in the patio. And that was the only thing. It was very, very sad. Yeah.
And sometimes if you're from the East Coast or a place where there's more seasons and weather, and then you go to California that first holiday in Southern California when you're from somewhere else, it can be very unsettling because there's no seasons in Southern California. Like, you know, if you're used to a crisp Thanksgiving dinner, you know, dinner and outside throwing the football in the cold or something. Mm-hmm. It's not like that. It's 75 degrees and sunny and, you know, or Christmas or New Year's in Southern California. The weather is amazing, but you sort of miss, I like feeling the seasons change. I love when the snow comes and or the rain, the hard rain in the spring and seeing the blossoms and things like that. So,
Did you guys get snow in the Couve, in Vancouver?
In Vancouver, there was some snow locally. Definitely the mountains are covered. We actually drove down to White Rock and Crescent Beach area. And there was snow down there, which was really fun. We took Walter the dog and ran him around in the snow. So we definitely are getting a great Hallmark Christmas experience for sure.
Gotcha. Yeah, two days ago, we got hammered. We got hammered. There's snow everywhere here.
So wow.
It's wow. crazy, which is nice,
happy holidays.
To be able to see that. Yeah, happy holidays, everybody. This week.
Yes, what are we doing this week?
We are reviewing the episode Investigations.
Investigations is the next one.
Right. Yeah. So why don't we go watch this episode and come back and give everybody our 2 cents worth on this.
Star Trek Voyager Investigations. Let's go investigate.
All right, welcome back, guys, from watching Investigations.
Investigations, yes. It's, wow. That was a little bit of what I remembered, I guess, from, put together from the title and everything, but not at all. I had no idea that Tom Paris had such a big story. I didn't remember any Tom Paris story.
I know. And I just want to say, I want to apologize. You were literally done probably 36 minutes before I was done with this review, watching this episode.
Yeah, I don't know how I got through that one pretty fast. I was actually enjoying watching it, so I didn't pause. Yeah. Sometimes I'll stop it and I'll make notes and stuff, but I was kind of caught up in it. So I didn't make as many notes. I just sort of watched it. And
I didn't. I paused a lot. And I got distracted and I paused a lot. There's the one part I probably paused and rewound 10 times.
Wow.
Like over and over and over again. That scene with you and Neelix in the room when you're packing. Like that.
Right.
Scene.
Right.
So so it took me a lot longer to get finished. Wow. So I apologize for that. But we're here. So that's good.
Here we are.
Let's do our little synopsis. Your limerick and then my
haiku. Let me get to my limerick. This is very exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear it.
Okay, here's my limerick for the episode Investigations.
Mm.
Neelix starts a morning news briefing. Tom quits and announces he's leaving. Jonas is caught. He and Neelix fought. And the doctor can't get the attention he's seeking.
What percentage of that is McNeil and what percentage of that is Rebecca?
50-50. I'll split that down the middle. Yeah.
Right down the middle. 50-50.
Split that one down the middle. Yeah. I gotta have a collaborator on this. I can't do a limerick by myself.
Okay. Yeah. Well, season 3, I'm gonna have to probably enlist the aid of Megan. She is Irish in background. So there you go.
So she'll have maybe natural abilities in the limerick.
Natural limericking. That is one of the prerequisites of being Irish. You must be really good at limericks. At
limericks, exactly.
An Irishman or an Irish lady. Okay.
What's your haiku? Yeah, I want to hear.
Here we go. Tom leaves Voyager. Search for spy intensifies. It's Jonas. He dies.
Nice.
You like the delivery there? It's Jonas. Yeah. He it was almost Shatner-esque. It's Jonas. He dies. So,
yeah.
And nice. Did you notice I rhymed search for spy intensifies? There's a little rhyme the haiku.
Warming up for the limerick you're going to have to do in season 3.
Yes, I am. And I was sitting there thinking, why did I agree to do that? Am I an idiot?
I don't know why.
I sat there and I took it on. And I knew that I just saw this weight just lift. It was like an invisible weight lifted off your shoulder the minute I said, I'll take limericks for season 3. And you were like, thank you. All right.
Thank you. Yes.
I like this episode. It was fun. A briefing with Neelix. I have to be honest. I felt like there's a lot of parallels between Neelix and myself in a way. Like at the end with his crazy, goofy laugh. I have a crazy, goofy laugh.
Yeah.
Neelix with his whole briefing with Neelix is kind of my idea of Delta Flyers. Like this is our briefing
with Neelix. It was his, right? He was doing like his podcast.
He was doing his podcast.
I can't believe
before
it.
Before podcasts were a thing. Yeah. So maybe that's what I got it from. Maybe subconsciously I got it from my idea from Neelix's idea.
Briefings with Neelix.
Mm-hmm.
We should change the name of this to, instead of Delta Flyers, it should be Briefings with Tom and Harry.
Yeah. Or, you know, to make it even shorter, just put Tom and Harry together. Briefings with Terry or briefings with Hom. Hom is Harry and Tom. So Hom. So. Did you notice anybody in this episode in the very beginning?
Did I notice anybody in the episode? Oh, well, yes. Okay. Yes. Let's get there in a second.
But all right. Okay.
Neelix is trying to boost morale, briefings with Neelix.
Yeah.
And then he runs into Harry in the hallway, what do we call it? Our hallways? Our
corridor?
Corridors. That's the Starfleet word. Yeah, so you're in the corridor. And I literally went, oh my God, when that moment came up. It was the Prince of Jordan. I forgot this was the episode, and that's the moment, famous moment for all of us, that the Prince of Jordan was on our show.
Yeah.
And I forgot that you were chit-chatting with him. What were you talking about with him? Do you remember?
Yeah, you know what's so funny is I don't remember this scene properly. Like for years I've been telling this story about the prince coming on the show.
Yeah.
And I always sit there at conventions and I talk about, you know, I get a memo and it says next week you will be in a scene with Prince Abdullah of Jordan, who will be here in Starfleet uniform as a walk-on background actor. I said, "Wow, okay." And I remember meeting him and I said, Prince Abdullah, how are you? My name is Garrett. And he's like, oh, very nice to meet you. I said, how's it going? He said, I'm really nervous. I'm really, really nervous. I said, really? You are the crown prince of a country. You will soon be the king of your country.
Yeah, and which he is now. Nervous? He is the king.
Yeah, he's the king. He's
been the king
of Jordan
for a while. Yeah.
King Abdullah. And I honestly felt that was the most oddest thing to come out of his mouth. I thought, like, I mean, you clearly have, you know, been in front of a camera in terms of talking to your nation and to the people, your followers, your subjects, and you're probably used to that. And Prince Abdullah or King Abdullah, let's just call him King. He's King right now. So King Abdullah is fluent in English. I think he and his siblings went to university in the US. So they had US upbringing for part of their lives.
I feel like so he went to USC. Did he go to USC?
Not sure, but his English is perfect. He's very well spoken and he is a huge, huge fan of Star Trek. I mean, mega fan. And this was one of the things he wanted to do. He wanted to have a walk on. And I remember when he said he was nervous, I was like, wow. I said, you know what? Prince Abdullah, let me help you a little bit here. Let me give you like a little bit of an acting exercise or something to get your mind off of your nervousness. And it instantly took me back to the pilot episode of Voyager, Caretaker, where I was so nervous in that intro scene where Tom comes in and orders the tomato soup. And I'm sitting off with the other, the first officer.
Oh, yeah.
The doctor.
Yeah, that's right.
I was so nervous. I was so nervous. And they helped me by doing a little improv, you know? So I said, you know, this is my time to pay it forward and help out this person, the prince, from being nervous. And I just said to him, I said, listen, you don't have any lines in here, thank God, so you don't have to say anything, but you are on camera. And anybody whose background, who is worth their salt as a background actor, is going to try to keep a life going and not just be a prop. You know, you have to be able to do something to make it look like
you create an imaginary circumstance for yourself of what you're doing, what your activity is, why you're here, where you're going.
Yeah. Yes. So, and I wanted to keep it simple. So I didn't go through all that kind of stuff that an actor needs to do to prepare beforehand. I said, just do this. Imagine that as I'm talking to you, as the camera comes up to us, I'm sort of just chatting with you, and I don't have any lines until Neelix talks to me. So let me just talk to you, and I'm going to move my mouth. And just you imagine something. Can you just think of something, an amusing story or maybe a joke that somebody told you in the last couple of months that you know, made you smile or made you feel good? And he says, yes, I can. And I said, okay, so imagine now that when I'm moving my mouth, I am repeating that story or that joke or whatever you have in your mind right now, that I'm telling you that same thing. And now when you hear it, I want you to try to imagine hearing this for the very first time and go through your emotions of what the feelings that you had when you first heard this. And so this will keep your mind occupied so that you're not completely deer in the headlights, you know, syndrome. So, but the funny thing is, I recall I didn't have any lines. I recall this scene was a scene between Neelix and another person on the ship.
Oh,
and that it
funny.
Was just the prince and I were in the background, and that at the end of when the scene is over, Neelix leaves, whoever else leaves, and that's the end of the scene. That I wasn't part of the scene. And
you thought
and
you were background as well. Oh, that's funny, because you had a big speech to him about being a journalist. And
like
what you say in that scene to him is very important in the story.
I don't remember any of that. I don't remember any of that, but being part of this, I remember just being the very background. And I also remember Prince Abdullah having more of a reaction. I thought, and I've been telling this story at conventions for years, that the camera comes on me, I move my mouth, the prince remembers whatever I said, it was a funny story, and he does a little laugh. He doesn't really do a laugh. He just kind of like looks at me and smiles and just kind of nods at me.
He does smile. It definitely was a light reaction, but it was very subtle. Yeah.
Yeah. So
it felt very natural. He didn't seem nervous at all. Whatever you said to him. Seemed to have focused.
Right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. It did help him. It did help. Yeah. And he looks good in a Starfleet uniform. I'm
going to
say that. Yeah. For a royalty, he looks great.
He fit right in there.
He fit right in. So, you know.
That was fun to see. That was really fun to see. Because I've, you know, it's legendary when the prince at the time was on our show, but for all of us. But I hadn't seen that, I don't think, since we filmed the show. So that was great. It was a surprise to see. And that scene was very important because you pushed Neelix to do hard news, not just lighthearted stuff on his briefings with Neelix.
Yeah.
And you tell him the job of a journalist is independent. So that's why he keeps going after, you know, the truth here and eventually helps out Jonas and obviously.
Mm-hmm. So I did this whole thing. And then years later, after filming this scene, I'm back in Taiwan visiting. It was a wedding of a cousin or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it comes out that my cousin's father, my uncle, met the prince.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like, what?
Yeah. What a small world. That's crazy.
A very small world. Wow. And so my cousin goes, yeah, you know, my dad also met Prince Abdullah. And I said, what?
Wow.
He's like, yeah. Cause like my uncle, is the youngest general in Taiwanese military history. So he went over to Jordan as a Taiwanese general for the Taiwanese army. And he went over there to basically, you know, some type of ceremonial type of like, hey, we acknowledge you. Yeah, this kind of, exactly. And Prince Abdullah presented my uncle with a Jordanian ceremonial dagger. Like it was like, he has this dagger and its sheath and everything like that. And I didn't know any of this stuff. And if I'd known this beforehand, I could have brought this up. I would have said, you know, well, my uncle's, General Wong, you know him. And I didn't know that until years later. So that's the side note. Yeah, just want to throw
that out there. Small world
for sure. Yeah. Wow. Did you notice after they leave Prince Abdullah and Harry starts adjusting his comp badge? I think this is the first and only time that Harry Kim adjusts his, that anybody actually, I'm literally twisting it around and adjusting it. I'm not hitting it. I'm just like playing with it. And I thought, wow, why did I make that choice? Yes.
Yeah, that is unusual. I've never seen anyone do that before.
No.
In fact, in this episode, to jump to much later, Jonas takes Neelix's comm badge off and his own comm badge off, which I've never, I don't recall other stories where we've purposely removed comm badges like that, that I can think of.
There may be one other time, I think, but still it's rare to see that to be removed. And also rare for me to sit here and adjust and play with it. What the heck? And I don't think this is a directorial thing.
We used to do that all the time when the wardrobe people would come up for what we call final touches, where right before we're about to roll, hair and makeup come up and wardrobe comes up, and they used to use these rollers and get all the lint off of our costumes. And then sometimes they would take the comm badge, the wardrobe people, and they go, oh, that looks a little crooked, and they'd adjust the comm badge. So
they
adjust them all the time, but it was more of an off-camera thing that we would do.
Definitely. Yeah. And, you know, it's just so weird to me. And I don't think Les Landau, who directed this episode, would have said, Garrett, I need you to walk down the corridor and adjust your comm badge. I think that was just some weird nervous twitch that I had that I did.
Yeah.
Just to quickly credit who the teleplay is by Jerry Taylor, story by Jeff Schnelfer and Ed Bond. And of course, I just mentioned directed by Uncle Les Landau on this episode. The scene in the turbo, that was a long scene for Kim. I had no clue that even happened. So,
That was a nice long scene. And then I thought it was weird at the very end of that scene, Neelix gets a call from the bridge. It's a female voice. I don't know who it was.
Yes.
I don't know who was calling Neelix. And I don't think I ever remember any of our crew members getting some strange voice from anywhere saying, hey, Harry, you've got a call. What? When does that happen? Like, when do we ever get call? It seems like that would be a big deal.
Did that sound like Janeway?
Is calling. Yeah. It wasn't Janeway. It was somebody else.
Yeah.
And they made it seem like we get calls from other ships all the time, like personal calls. It's like, when do we get personal calls? Like, if some vessel is contacting our ship, it usually goes through the bridge and the senior officers before they just, you know, randomly call somebody in a turbo lift. Hey, you got a call coming in. It was very strange. Neelix goes to his quarters and Laxeth is calling him. And I loved at the end, or not at the end, in the beginning, he says, oh, you old dilithium scrubber. I love that line.
I have that note too.
I wish Neelix would use that expression all. I wish that had become, oh, you old dilithium scrubber. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing to be a dilithium scrubber.
I don't know. That might be a t-shirt.
I like it though. It might be a t-shirt.
Dilithium scrubber or ye old dilithium scrubber.
Dilithium scrubber. I don't know. I like it. I like it a lot. And so Laxeth says to Neelix, oh, and by the way, one of your crew members is leaving the ship. And Neelix is like, what? He's shocked.
Totally shocked.
He goes to Janeway's ready room, and Tuvok is there, and they give Neelix the news. Yes, Harris was relieved of duty, and he's decided he wants to leave the ship and not be a part of Starfleet anymore. And Neelix seemed very sad at the end of that scene. I thought that was very sweet, especially with like having gone through parturition with the Tom and Neelix story,
Your sort bonding of bonding episode.
Bonding. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought that was really sweet that Neelix seemed very sad. And Neelix comes to Paris's quarters to try to find out what's going on and like talk him out of it. And boy, Paris was yelling at him and just being a jerk. I was like, oh,
you know, you yelled once, like towards the end, right in the closet area. You got really loud in one line and came back down. But this to me was like a breakup scene. Like Paris was breaking up with Neelix.
I know.
Because you even say to him, look, it's not you. It's me. Like you even had that that corny line that everyone said.
Breakup line.
Yeah, it's not you, breakup it's me. Line. It's not you. It's me, Neelix.
Yeah.
Not you. Because he thinks it's him because of all the, you know, the jealousy things and whatever. But you guys you've already squashed that drama. So it's already passed. But it definitely seemed like
Paris
it was
kind of harsh though, and Neelix just kept, you know, being super sweet and nice. And at the end, Neelix even goes in and just hugs him. Just like at the very end of that scene, I thought that hug was very sweet. And you sort of saw, because Paris obviously is putting on a show here for Neelix a bit.
Right.
But when Neelix comes in for the hug, you see Paris's face and he's like, oh, this is really hard to keep this act up. I could see that. I thought that was a really, really nice moment.
Yeah. I just also want to just pay some homage to your suede shirt and tweed pants combo.
Yes. Thank you.
Was it suede? It looks suede-ish to me. It
probably was. I had memories as I watched this episode of that outfit, and it was not comfortable. I remember the pants sort of like at the hips. It was hard to bend my legs because they didn't really stretch. They were just like, it was super tight around the hip area, as I recall. And it was tweed. Yeah. You're right. So it's not like, you know, stretchy fabric of any kind or any room in there. It just... I do remember it being very uncomfortable and kind of itchy pants.
I'm glad you have memories of that. Because that was my next question. What do you remember from that bizarre outfit that you had on?
And
it was uncomfortable. Because first I thought it was velour. I was like, is that a velour shirt? I go, no, wait a minute. It looks more suede-ish, actually.
I also noticed, by the way, I had a lot of chest hair poking out there.
I wrote that down too. I'm like, what the heck is hello Chewbacca? What is that? I mean, your chest hair doesn't go that high, does it? Pull it down. Where is? I almost cussed right now. I don't see anything right now.
No, I've got.
It's very light there.
It's very blonde. I don't know why I seem to have a lot of chest hair in that.
Well,
scene.
You 24 years ago, for some reason, 24 years ago, your chest hair was higher on your body.
Yeah,
actually the older you've gotten, it's gone more and further and further south.
Yeah, I don't know why it that was a surprising amount of chest hair.
I thought it was applied by makeup. No, I thought, did makeup department actually apply his chest hair? You were very hairy.
I was a hairy guy.
You should have been Harry Paris.
They should have made that shirt a little bit lower, and it could have been a classic sort of like Neil Diamond chest hair or something. It would have been awesome.
Neil Diamond.
But we just got a little hint of it. Out of the top of that very uncomfortable outfit. That outfit seemed to be a bit of a nod to the Maquis side of Paris's life, that it was sort of in the Maquis colors a bit. I don't know.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. Because it was this earth tone thing. And I was just wondering, is this symbolism? Is there something?
I think it was a bit of anything? Like maybe these were his Maquis clothes or something. It was a nod I think.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We also see Neelix talking to the doctor after this, and Neelix is trying to convince the doctor to be on his show, and the doctor seems very reluctant at first.
Yes.
But then his ego gets the better of him, and so he agrees to do it, and even calls.
Well, not only does he agree, he goes 130% into it. He's like, I have all these ideas.
All these ideas. I love his first idea, which is a wonderful topic of how to keep your nostrils happy. How to keep your nostrils happy. It's brilliant. Brilliant first. Yeah. Who wouldn't want to know how to keep your nostrils happy? And the hidden mysteries of the adrenal gland is another subject he wants. I mean, boy, I wish I could have seen these great lectures and interviews. I think it would have been compelling.
Like reading a medical journal, like in the episode where he told the DM lady.
The DM lady he's in love with to go read his medical textbook. I loved the editorial that Neelix did about Paris. I thought it was, I thought this episode for Paris as a character was really great. Not only the scenes that I got to do, but also the way it was structured to sort of redeem this character from historical kind of jerky behavior. You know, it basically said for months he's been part of this
undercover operation, right?
Yes.
Do you think Harry knew of this? Yes or no?
No.
I don't think so either.
No. In the transporter room, there's a very sad moment there where and Paris gives. Oh, speaking of taking off comm badges, Paris takes his comm badge off and he gives it to Harry. I don't think anybody except for Janeway and Tuvok were in on this.
The minute you gave me the comm badge, I should have been so distraught with your leaving that I end up just swallowing it in a weird thing. Like a David Lynch movie. Swallow it. It's like a David Lynch movie or TV show. Yeah. So I don't think I knew that you were leaving, but
I don't think anybody did.
Yeah.
I don't think that even as an actor, I was told this story until much closer to getting the script, even though they may have been thinking this. I don't think, I don't recall them telling me this months ahead of time. I think they just wrote these scenes where Tom was a jerk.
Okay.
And that was the instruction, just to be kind of difficult and, so I didn't play those early scenes months prior. I didn't play that with the knowledge of, this is all an act. I mean, for this episode, it certainly was an act.
Right.
You know,
but prior, episodes, no, you would not have known that. Right.
I don't think so. I don't recall knowing that.
They always kept us in the dark, in terms of the
Neelix editorial about Paris on his little briefings with Neelix show as it cut around to engineering and people watching all over the ship, I thought was a real, very lovely homage to that character and kind of who he is. And, Neelix's version of, look, yes, I judge this guy, but I know that he's not that. He's not a jerk. I know that he's a good guy and he's done heroic things. And I thought that was a really nice way for the writers to sort of buy back some of the jerky behavior, you know?
Yeah. This is a good Paris redemption episode.
Yes. You know? Yes, absolutely.
For sure. For sure.
Harry wants Janeway to wait and replace Harry. I wrote down and, you know, you went in there to fight for me. And say, look, I know he took off, but you know, maybe he'll change his mind.
Yeah, let's not replace Tom just off the bat. And she's like, she's like, that scene shows that I don't know about it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
And she says, nope, we're gonna replace him. I don't know with who. I don't know with who. But
I think they mentioned Baytart.
Yeah, they mentioned Baytart. That's true. Right.
Who evidently was the juggler on the ship, which we didn't get to see because in the very first.
By the way, I was a juggler. Do you remember I would juggle sometimes off camera? I would juggle stuff. That was like my thing. Why didn't they let me juggle? Tom Paris could have been the juggler.
Are you being serious right now?
I'm being serious. You don't remember me juggling down at my chair?
No, you would juggle off camera?
Yeah. I would juggle like wads of paper or whatever was around if there was stuff. That's why you would think, because I can juggle, you would think I wouldn't be so clumsy with the phasers and break a dozen of them. But I did. I dropped all the phasers and broke the props, so they wouldn't give me phasers anymore.
I don't remember you juggling that much, Robbie. Oh, yeah. I don't. Okay. Yeah.
Huh. I was very jealous to hear Beitard is the juggler.
Right. So now you know how I feel when people don't do voices and they don't use me for it. Now you know. I understand how you felt, because I felt that way too. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in the briefing room, we get a call from Jonas. B'Elanna gets a call. Hey, the warp engine's got some problems. You got to get down here. And Neelix wants to go and be the journalist, because now you can tell he's your advice, Harry's advice.
Right.
You know, be that investigative journalist. So off Neelix goes down to engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And the warp core is having these plasma bursts that are radiating the core and all kinds of problems. And Jonas seems to be very heroic, trying to, you know, save the warp core and everything. He even risks injury and risks his life, really. You know, B'Elanna saying, don't.
And he goes to sickbay because of his plasma burns.
Yep.
Along with one other crew member. Right?
Yes.
It was Jonas and another individual with plasma burns.
Yeah. And the doctor still wants to be on the show. I think he's got another comment about being on the show.
Yes.
And we get a call from the Talaxian ship that they were attacked and that the Kazon kidnapped Paris, that the only thing they took was Paris, which is very strange.
It's kind of weird. They don't take cargo. They just took Paris. That's it.
Took Paris. Seems weird.
Yeah. And
Paris meets Seska, up. He's prisoner there. And she knows about the trouble with Chakotay. And Paris is like, who have you talked to? He's trying already to find out, do his little spy work.
Yeah, this is the note that I wrote down about your Seska interaction. So Seska and Paris. The blue light makes Paris look like the hologram from Star Wars of Carrie Fisher's Princess Leia. Like when in the original Star Wars, well, the first Star Wars movie, not episode one, but the first Star Wars movie, when they're tinkering with R2-D2 and out pops that little holographic message. And it says, help me, Obi-Wan. You're the only one I can, whatever. She's totally blue. You are totally blue in that scene. You're lit under a blue light and behind you, it's not blue, it's regular color. So it does make you look like a hologram to me. So that was my very first, not hologram from our show, but a Star Wars hologram. So I don't know if you noticed the lighting there, but it was very.
I did,
very
I noticed dramatic. The lighting. I thought that set was kind of cool. I love the little,
right.
Sticks that were sticking out of the computer, all the memory sticks and things. I thought it was lit very pretty. I thought it was a cool set.
But you were not, but the entire set was not bathed in that blue light. Just you were bathed in the blue light and the background behind you was regular colors, so that made you look like you were the Star Wars hologram. So that is my note there.
That scene was very interesting, and Seska offers a deal. Obviously, this sort of the behavior has worked. Chakotay, she knows about the trouble with Chakotay. Paris is trying to find out who did it. And then she leaves, offers him this deal to join her team, you know, pick a side. Which side do you want to be on? And then you see him trying to hack into the Kazon computer with this little thing he snuck in, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Kind of cool. Finally, that turn, that reveal of like, oh, Paris, this was all a show, and this is why he's really here. He's here to be a spy. I thought that was very cool.
Yeah, you were essentially a human Trojan horse, is what you were. You were there to try to get the info right in the belly of the beast, of the enemy. Mm-hmm.
This is when we go back to the ship, and this is where Neelix goes into engineering to investigate and be a journalist, and he's talking to Jonas.
Right.
About the communications, and Jonas is kind of saying, hey, there's nothing there. Leave it alone.
Right. And Hogan reveals that the messages were sent without using any of the ship's antenna arrays, but through the ship's power grid.
Before that, though, you see Jonas come over with a weapon, and Neelix gets a call from the doctor, who's pissed that he wasn't in the show again. in the middle of this, and Jonas has the weapon, and he's coming over to kill.
Was that a weapon? I don't think that was a weapon.
It was something that was going to hurt Neelix.
Well, it looked like a tiny blowtorch. And
some kind of tool. Yeah.
I wrote a joke down. I said, and this is in my video reaction. It's just, I'm going to tiny blowtorch you to death. Like, I'm going to first get your ear and then I'm going to move down to your earlobe. It just didn't look like it was a really effective weapon.
Oh, really? It looked pretty gruesome to me. I thought he was good.
Really?
That would hurt. That would hurt. Whatever that thing does would hurt.
Wow.
I think so.
Okay. All right.
I do. Well, I think so.
Let's just agree to disagree on that part.
So Jonas is about to kill him. And then that's when the doctor pops up. Has to hide his weapon. And the doctor really wants to be on the Neelix show. And he's ready to go again. And then Neelix says, you know, not today. Can't do it today. Neelix goes to talk to Tuvok. And Tuvok is like, drop it. Drop it, Neelix.
Yeah.
And you can see that he's not going to drop it because Harry told him, like, you got to bend the rules. It's all, he would have dropped it if it wasn't for that advice. So he goes back to engineering to look at these deleted communication files. Jonas is listening in on the whole conversation. That was definitely kind of creepy. You know, I kept feeling like, oh, Neelix is going to, he's just getting into a dangerous territory here. Mm-hmm. Neelix goes to Paris's quarters and discovers these secret communications. That we find out have been set up after the fact that wasn't Paris. I love that moment when Chakotay is brought into the plan.
Yeah. Because
he was pissed.
He's not happy.
No. It's like, wait a minute. Why didn't you tell me? He was really pissed.
Yeah, he just felt no one trusted him, which is, I'd be pissed too. It's like, I'm the freaking commander here. You should let me know, you know? So,
because
he outranks Tuvok, right? Tuvok is not outranking Chakotay.
Yeah.
But yet Chakotay doesn't know anything. It's just between Paris and, Tuvok. Yeah, literally Paris, Janeway, and Tuvok are the only people that know about this. So, I get it. I understand you, Chakotay. Is this where we flash back to the Kazon ship then? Where you're fighting? Is this what happens?
Almost.
Okay.
Because at the end of that scene, they encourage Neelix. They all agree Neelix should keep investigating, even though it's dangerous. And Tuvok says, "We got your back. We'll keep you monitored the whole time."
Mm-hmm.
And I loved in that scene when Neelix goes, "I just want to do whatever I have to get Tom home safely." I thought that was a very sweet detail in the scene. Again, Neelix really. Expressing his fondness for his friend Tom, I thought was very sweet. Yeah. Then we go to the Kazon ship, and there's a bit of a fight. And I literally was looking at the fight, and I was like, "Oh my god, I'm doing my own stunts here!" Like, I looked at the different cuts, and I'm like, "There's no stuntman in there."
Yeah.
I went back and I literally watched it four times. I was like, "Oh, let me check out my stunt work." Like my fall and my roll and my roll up to a knee and firing and hitting. And I was like, that was pretty good. I did pretty good with that stunt work. There was no stuntman there.
Huh. Well, what happens is when you're leaving that's what predicates the fight scene is that little device explodes. That little device you have on the console, it explodes. You get blown over the bed. And then, like, in a delayed reaction, the Kazon also gets blown over the bed. And wouldn't you think that everyone would be blown at the same time? It's sort of a delayed reaction where he flew. Yeah, you would think so. But
I had to do my bounce off the bed and roll on the ground. I needed plenty of room for my fancy stunt.
Yes.
And then the other guy can fall in.
Right. And now, if you notice, the Kazon that you're fighting against, and this is probably because we just... Our special interviewee this month was stunt coordinator Dennis Matalone. So after that interview, I just, especially with this episode, this is the first episode we've reviewed since interviewing Dennis. I'm now watching very closely to see who is doing the stunts. And so that Kazon, did you see who that Kazon is that you're fighting?
No, I didn't see who it was. Who was it?
Tom Morga.
Was it Tom Morga?
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
Because the thing is, he's got all the makeup on. You got to, you know, you can't recognize the makeup. But if you look, it's those freaking he's got these crazy blue eyes. Tom Morga has these really, it's like the same color as if you're, oh, for those of you who are watching the video portion, like the nacelles on the background of my Voyager right here, is it's that kind of blue. It's like really, really intense blue. So that was Morga for sure.
That's funny.
And I looked up Morga. Morga's born the same year as my mom. Yes, he's like 79 or something now. God. So I couldn't Tom believe Morga that. That means those, what he was doing.
For those on video, I've got a picture of Tom Morga, who was on our stunt team for Voyager and did so many characters and so many stunts. Tom Morga's.
Yep. I would have to say that was Dennis Madelone's right-hand man. He was literally, that's his go-to guy whenever he needed anybody to get dressed up as an alien or human, whatever, you know, like they would be Tom Morga. Right. So,
well, here's a picture. I'm showing a picture now of Tom Morga, who doubled Jonathan Frakes on Next Generation.
Oh my God.
With a fake beard and everything for Riker. Tom Morga did so many different Trek stunts. Great stunts.
Also, after you beat up Tom, you kind of run out and you look back at everybody and you go, you say, thanks for the hospitality. And that's almost like the new yes ma'am. It's like, thanks for the hospitality. You did a little,
it was
little
like an thing. Ironic, sarcastic sort of,
it is.
Thanks
it
for
is.
The hospitality. It had a little bit of neener, neener, boo-boo.
It did. If I ever make a shirt with your face in it, I could put those words on the bottom. Thanks for the hospitality. Yeah.
I was very impressed and surprised. I did all the stunts. That fight outside, I did that as well.
You did a good job.
Because I kept looking. I literally watched it a couple times. I'm like, is there a double in there anywhere? Because we did get doubled quite often for certain stunts. But for that whole fight sequence, I think I did all that myself. So, that was pretty cool. I like doing stunts. I always enjoyed it. I thought it was a really nice moment with Paris in the shuttle flying back saying, you know what, get out of here. It's dangerous coordinates. It's a trap. They've got, troops on the ground.
I might not make it.
Get out of here. I'll take care of myself.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really heroic gesture.
It was a heroic gesture, but I would like to bring a notice to the fact that there's a little weird not a blooper, but just something that I caught in the initial conversation of you inside the shuttle and you're talking and you're being, the shuttle is being rocked by fire and alien fire, right? And you're like moving around. Your hand at one point braces you. You're trying to brace yourself.
Oh yeah, up on.
And it goes outside of the shuttle. Like you're touching. You can clearly see where the window. The window, right? I mean
Wrapped around.
Yeah, your hand goes outside of it to hold there. And I was thinking maybe
the force field is on the outside. Maybe it's a thick beam with the force field on the outside. I just want to remind everybody when those things are shaking around, and you're right, in the shuttle, it was crazy. It was shaking almost upside down. It was so much shaking.
Yeah.
But those sets didn't shake, like nothing moved. So it was just the camera operators rocking the camera around and whatever and we did as actors giving it that movement. I mean, if you sat back and watched while we filmed it, it would look ridiculous. Mm. It only looks like it makes sense when you see it through the camera, the camera that's actually shooting it. So
correct.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing you did not catch that little.
I did not.
Slip there. No. Okay. It's very interesting because
I've seen that on our show before. Like, some of the bulkheads, like in the captain's ready room and stuff, they're at an angle. And I've seen Kate sometimes standing up by the window and I'm like, isn't her head sticking out into space? Like, isn't she a little close to that? It's just the angle of the, the way that it should be. You're like, I don't think you can stand there.
I don't think you're getting oxygen right now, Captain.
your head's in space.
It's totally in space. Okay. Yeah. So just the fact that you're part of your digits were in space was okay. You're not going to die for that. Yeah. But I just,
Okay. And we're almost near the end here. Neelix has a big fight scene with Jonas, which I did look for the stunt doubles in that scene and saw them a couple of times. I just want to say my Jonas? Fight scenes, I didn't have any doubles.
It was you. Okay. And usually when you can, this is how you tell a stunt double. It's usually the wig is a little bit off.
Yeah, it's usually the hair.
They don't spend as much money on the wig for the stunt double as they do as the wig or as the hair of the person that's doing it, or if they were wearing a wig. And Jonas's stunt double's hair did not match Raphael Samardzija's hair color at all.
Not at all. Like, and the Neelix double looked smaller and he looked
like a smaller Neelix, right? Yeah. So it did
some of the close-ups and that stuff, but the bigger fighting was doubles for sure. But they needed doubles because eventually
they
Neelix
flip over the
throws him over into the warp stuff or whatever. Something. I don't really understand what that was. It was like a breach in a hole.
It's green.
Warp so plasma?
Was it leaking warp plasma? I don't
know. Something like that. It was unclear.
Yes, but you die immediately when you're in there.
You got clearly. To. Anything green that's that green can't
you
be
just
good
die.
For you. Yeah.
No. It's like Toxic Avenger.
Yeah. It's not pea soup. It's not a seaweed bath. That was bad.
Is that lentil or pea? What is that exactly? Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to bring light to when weapons are back online, I'm on the bridge with Janeway, and Janeway says, fire at will. And right when she says that, Megan's sitting next to me, and I know it's like a dad joke, but she goes like, what did Will do? like why are you firing at Will? Get it? Fire at Will. Like, I never thought about that.
Yeah, dad joke.
I laughed at it. It was great. I thought it was funny.
Fire at Will. What did Will do?
What did Will do?
Why are they mad at Will?
He did nothing to you. The video at the very end when you're being interviewed. It's cute. And do you notice that you pronounce Chakotay?
Chakotay.
As if.
No, I don't. I don't know. How did I pronounce it?
You don't say you give it like a New York twist. You went Chakotay. You said it like you were a New Yorker.
Yeah.
Chakotay. Which was interesting because nothing else out of your mouth is New York-esque except for the word or the name.
You know what's funny? I have a very adaptable accent because I moved around as a kid and I lived in New York for 12 years and I lived in the South and I've lived all over. So I found that as I was moving around as a kid, that when I moved to a new place like Philadelphia or the South, whatever, if I took on the accent that I would fit in, I'd make friends faster. So somewhere unconsciously, I pick up. If I'm talking with New Yorkers, I start bringing a little New York accent to it.
Yeah.
If I'm talking to my family from the South, I bring in my Southern. Mm-hmm. Well, that scene was with Ethan Phillips, who is a New Yorker. And so probably between takes, we were talking and I bet I was picking up a little of his New York vibe. So that when we got into the scene, I bet I had a little bit of a New York thing happening because I'm like a chameleon with my unconscious kind of adapting to accents. I don't do it consciously. It just sort of happens.
Look at that. We solved the mystery.
That's probably where
right
it came from.
There. We Sherlock Holmed that.
We did.
Very
we
impressed.
Investigated we
figured it.
Out. You see what
we
I did?
We did. And I am... we investigated it. Did it?
Yeah.
Okay. I gotta say, I do the same thing. I'm very much whoever I'm talking to, I take on their accent to the point that whoever's with me will whisper into my ear, "You're going to. Aren't you worried about being offensive to that person? That you're going to offend that person?"
Especially if it's like an ethnic accent. Yeah. I know. I feel like I used to do that. Like if I'm in a cab with a Latino, cab driver or something that has a thick accent, I will start saying English words. I don't even speak Spanish, but I'll start saying English words with a little, and it's unconscious. It's just about like connecting I don't mean anything disrespectful by it, but
you
know
just end up. Yeah. You Spanish-fy it a little bit.
We're in Germany. I'll Germany-fy it a little or I'll,
Yes. And it's just not to be offensive at all. We're trying to make you feel comfortable when speaking to us. That is what our natural tendencies are, I think. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What was your theme for this episode?
I didn't have one.
No? I got a theme?
No.
It took me a minute because I was like, all right, what is the theme for me in this? And it was a hard one because it was a very procedural sort of episode.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized it was really through Neelix's point of view as a journalist, as an investigator. The theme to mm-hmm. me is if you really want to get to the truth, the real truth, it requires a deep investigation. And I think that's true about anything in life. That's a great lesson in life, is like, you can't just look at Paris on the surface and know what's going on. You got to look deeper. You can't just look at, you know, this mystery story of this investigation on the surface. You got to go deeper. So that okay. that's, to me, that's like, if you really want to get to the core truth of anything, you're going to have to look, you're going to have to really investigate beyond the obvious.
That's interesting, because when I was thinking about theme and I really couldn't get it, the first thing that came to my mind is really the flip side of the coin of your theme, which is be wary of digging too deep. Oh. Because you may end up, you have to be careful that you don't get killed by a mini blowtorch very slowly.
That's a good theme. That's good for everyone to remember. Everyone should remember this.
Yes. Or just to watch your back. You know, if you're
this is the kind of that wisdom that you guys are going to get from the Delta Flyers, okay? The deep insight and profound wisdom of the Delta Flyers.
Okay, so your theme is, if you really want the truth, you got to make sure you dig deep. You go deep.
Yeah.
Mine is, if you're going to go dig deep, make sure you watch your back, because watch out for mini blowtorches or just peril. There could be peril around the corner because of your extra deep digging, right?
Yep.
Okay.
I think that's it for this week's recap.
Holy moly, we're done.
I had forgotten that was such a big Paris episode, and I'm really happy to have rewatched it with you, Garrett. An important episode.
Fabulous. Yeah. Good character development for, yes. And oh, by the way, I just want to say one last thing. I've never, ever seen closet area of any other crew member. Like the shelves that you were taking stuff out of. You don't see that ever with anyone else's quarters. So was one other random observation that I had.
That's true.
But so I thoroughly enjoyed seeing that you were a major player in this episode, which I had no clue. Like, you and I don't remember you joining a Talaxian convoy at all. That was news to us. So, and it's a thumbs up for me. I enjoyed this episode for sure.
Thumbs up for me too. Good episode. Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Stay tuned next week as we review the episode Deadlock. One of my favorites, actually.
Oh.
Deadlock.
Can't wait. I can't wait. See you then.
See ya.